Okay. We're at 4:46, so officially 1 minute over. So thanks, everyone, for coming along to my session. I'll probably get away from your viewing angle. How many of you went to the platform keynote in the earlier today? Cool, quite a few of you. And how many of you work in the space we call analytics? Quite a few of you. I'm actually glad that people did not raise their hand. That means you don't work in analytics, but you're interested. So I did, I'm the track owner, so I actually approved my own session as a level 200 session. It's probably going to be a level 300 session by the looks of it. But at the outset, I'm going to tell you that, is the audio okay? Sorry. At the outset, I'm going to tell you there's a few sessions which are follow-ups to this as well. We have some program managers from the product group, et cetera, who are presenting different components of this in much greater detail, level 300-400 sessions as well. So I will refer to those and give you the details on those as well. So if you're okay, I look at the spread, pretty good. Not a lot of people in the first few rows. You're like me. So let me begin with a bit of the philosophy behind the Cortana Analytics Suite. Even when we first announced it, even I was a bit stumped with the choice of the name. And then I figured out that Satya himself chose the name. So I was like, okay, great. But, you know, it is dependent on the philosophy behind the naming convention of the suite itself is intelligence. Or intelligent action, and that's kind of where the whole character of Cortana, if you're familiar with the Halo games, came from, and well, hasn't come yet because she was born 500 years from today. So, as you do, so you might have already seen this particular slide, and I'm going to keep the session very interactive. So, because it's a fairly demo-heavy session, so. If there are points during the session where you feel like you need to ask something, clarify something, feel free to do so. So effectively, this is the slide we covered in the more earlier today, I think at the overview session. And this is kind of the lineage of or the movement of data that's the repeatable process that we've encompassed in terms of most enterprises or most people when they're building solutions across, you know, either the cloud or on-premise or what have you, kind of need to first collect the data, which, you know, I think a lot of us already are very good at. Then manage the data in terms of like your usual ETL or go forward with, you know, encryption, whatever you want to do. Store the data because it's, you know, when now. I don't like to use the term big data because I think now, realistically, every data that we collect is kind of tending to be big anyway. So it's a very, you know, it's an evolving term. I think big data before used to be 2 terabytes. Now you have machines with 2 terabytes or more RAM. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's big data. But I personally think of big data as data which you can't look at it and get intelligence out of it without actually doing something with it. So that's kind of my own definition. You don't have to subscribe to it. And how do we, you know, utilize the resources which are in Azure and also on premise for you know managing and storing and processing that data? And then we move to once we've got the data collectively in those stores, you know, how do we apply, derive intelligence out of it. Because if you look at the line down the bottom, it's about going from having raw data into actionable intelligence. So, and making that process repeatable. Because in the enterprise, really, we never do work once. Work is more and more valuable when you can repeat it, scale it, improve it. Right. So, the idea is to get to a point where the whole process of data science, the whole process of analytics is something that is repeatable, approachable to newer new people and go from there. So you look at the third blade. We have services like machine learning, HD Insight, and Stream Analytics. This is kind of where all of our intelligence building and the sort actually happen. And then finally, we have the component, which is the visualization and consumption of the data. So this is where we have services like Power BI. I'm going to cover a bit of that. But there are some really good sessions on Power BI. I will give you the details on the track itself. One of my colleagues is actually doing a developer session on Power BI, how to build custom visualizations. So that's the visualization, so assistive intelligence. So within Microsoft, we're kind of starting to refer to AI not necessarily as artificial intelligence, but more as assistive intelligence, where the idea is to actually go from creeping people out to actually making it, you know, assisting them in making their actual decisions. One of those methods of consuming and operationalizing the intelligence is, the namesake of the solution itself, Cortana. Cortana being already available for over 120 million people across the globe who've made the upgrade to Windows 10 across Windows Phone, and now also available in preview on iOS and in future on Android as well. So that's one of those scenarios where it's no longer just a personal assistant. Cortana can actually assist you in making decisions rather than just being a dumb instruction acceptor or something like that. How many of you had heard of Project Oxford within Microsoft? Okay. Oh, actually, quite a few hands. Project Oxford was, just for the sake of the ones who haven't heard of it, Project Oxford was, well, it still is a research project. That's an ongoing research project within Microsoft Research where we build things like APIs that can understand human emotion. So if you've seen the recent news around where you take a selfie and it can tell you whether it's, are you happy or are you surprised or something like that. And also there's like tonal analysis of somebody's voice. So, and then things like textual sentiment analysis or social sentiment analysis. So all of those, components were in Project Oxford, so vision, computer vision. But we kind of branded it in the idea of perceptual intelligence, where the crux of it is the ability of a computer system to perceive what you want without you explicitly stating it. So that's kind of the motto of perceptual intelligence. So that's where, people may not be aware that this is what they want, but us being ahead of the curve and actually having the ability to say, hey, is this what you want? And it's very apt in targeted marketing or those kind of scenarios as well. And then finally, obviously, we have the ability to go into APIs, which can be, published, managed, version controlled, and scaled at a cloud scale or at a planet scale, in fact, because a lot of our, I'll give you an example, the Bing Search API is being used by so many organizations today, and also the Bing Ads API, the Xbox APIs, and stuff like that. So those are kind of very large-scale, planet-scale examples of it, but even for yourself, deploying those APIs in a certain way where the solution is repeatable, the solution is chargeable, the solution is manageable. So those are the kind of keywords that you're probably looking at. And people can consume it. Intelligent systems can consume it. So moving on. This is kind of where, these are the sort of the questions which the Cortana Analytics Suite aspires and aspires to answer and is attuned to answer. So, and components of it, and this is also a maturity curve. So today, when you have data, and lots of it or less of it, doesn't matter, you've got data today where you can do retrospective analysis of it. You can describe what has happened in the past or diagnose what has happened in the past. There's a manual process when you get from data to, you know, your usual ETL or, you know, data mining and stuff like that, and then you make a decision as a decision maker. You make a decision on that data. Well, hopefully you make a decision which is data driven, and then based on that decision you go towards an action. So the question you ask really is what happened. The next level up, you know, when you try and decrease that manual process and go to a slightly more advanced, more intelligent question is like, why did it happen? You're actually asking diagnostically to yourself and to your data, the question is, why did this actually take place in my organization? All right? Why did that particular component fail in our machinery? Or why did this user click over here as opposed to over here? So it's like your typical clickstream data or something like that. Or why was our supply chain not meeting demand or something like that? That's a much bigger question. You should probably ask your people, but anyway. Then the next level up, when you're trying to decrease that manual process even further, is you're trying to get into the predictive mode. So now you're trying to ask questions around what will happen. This is where your machine learning, model building, big data analytics with Hadoop and stuff like that comes into play. So this is in no way replacing your decision-making capacity. I think that's a mistake that people make sometimes, saying, hey, artificial intelligence takes over the world. We're far from it. Trust me, that's not going to happen anytime soon. I'm not saying it won't happen at all. what you're trying to effectively answer is, if I have an understanding of what has happened in the past for a long enough time, or if I have the understanding of what my customers are likely to do or have done before, then maybe I can train an algorithm to answer to me saying, what are they going to do next? So what will happen in that context? And then finally, with a scenario which is, you know, apt for, let's say, a lot of IoT solutions or a lot of machine-to-machine interaction kind of solutions. You need an alarm system. You need an asset tagging system. You need a inventory identification system where, you know, it's actually sometimes not very feasible to have a human decision point because, you know, you actually should not be looking at a human decision point because the time, you'd probably be taking a billion of those decisions a second if you're if it's a fraud detection algorithm over a credit card processing platform, right? So there's billion transactions a second, so you can't have a human person actually doing anything. So that's where you need to go towards decision automation and decision and very fast decision support. This is where the Cortana Analytics Suite and also the IoT Suite. By the way, there's a few sessions on IoT Suite as well, which is Uli, who covered the session in earlier today, will be presenting. So please please attend those if you're interested. But you see that's where the maturity curve is. So in terms of, but again, you need to be there's no two ways, as in like I'm totally going for automation and not worrying about diagnostic or anything like that. All of these questions have a role to play in the organization, and it is important to understand that all of these questions need to be answered in an intelligent way, right? And actioned in an intelligent way. All right. So after this, I'm going to go into a bit of a specific data set and how what we called, if you saw the title of the session, it said using the Cortana Analytics process. The Cortana Analytics process is kind of a almost like a decision algorithm, which is not run on a machine. It's just run in your brain, as in like what solution or what mix of solutions do I use to solve my problem, right? So how do I go about solving this scenario versus that scenario? So that Cortana Analytics process, it's a very well-documented process. It's available already on Azure.com, and also if you go on CortanaAnalytics.com. I'm going to talk to a particular data set which we used in terms of honing and birthing the process a little bit internally, so that the information management and machine learning team actually use this data set while. So the question is, I have a lot of data, which in this case was a massive data set. How do I, you know, and I want to transform it into intelligent action. So somebody like me came to you and said, hey, we want to take data and intelligent action. How do I actually do it? List of steps that I can subscribe to that can get me to a pretty intelligent outcome without, you know, me going completely blind into something. So what we did in the case of the data set that I'm talking about is the NYC taxis data set. Has anybody seen this or used this data set before? No? All right, okay. So let me give you a bit of insight into the data itself. So this is actually very apt if you've been following the taxis, your taxis versus Uber conversation in Australia. Anybody been following that? Taxis versus Uber? Yep, okay. So this is effectively a data scientist, a data analyst in New York by the name of Chris Wong. He had this problem like, hey, you know, Mondays, you know, there's a certain period of time, especially after work, I need to grab a taxi, and the problem is there's no taxis in New York, and it's just very hard to get a taxi, period. So the New York taxis, they actually tweeted out this tweet which came out and said, hey, you know, we have some data, here's what we... random taxi fact, trying to engage customers. And he was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, yeah, so he reached out, he tweeted back to them and said, can I get access to that data? They're like, oh, great. Yes, you can, no problem. File a Freedom of Information legal request. So it's called a FOIL request in the US. So they, and he did. He did file it. And, how do I get, so he thought it was going to be getting an API or just an access to a SQL server somewhere and like, oh, I'll just key in my server and port details and I'll be fine. No, they said, bring a hard drive. So, guess what he did? He went and bought a hard drive at, I don't know, whatever American electronic stores are called. So he bought a hard drive, he took it there, and then and they said, oh, it needs to be a sealed hard drive. We got all information security stuff. Anyway. So he got the data. So the data looks like this. So it's effectively taxis taken and fares paid in New York City for 12 months from January to December in 2013. And guess what? The first thing he did as soon as he got the data was make it available to everyone. So pretty much the data science community across the world went to town on the data, and like there was a lot of cool stuff coming out. He's got a pretty cool blog as well, so I've got the link. Anyway, so it's effectively 20 gigs of compressed CSV files, 48 gigs uncompressed, 173 million rows. So 173 million trips of taxis that actually happened in that 12-month period. And each of the records, they include like pickup, time, longitude, latitude, suburb, usual stuff. Hack license number, which is the driver's ID number, and the medallion number, which is like the permit to run a taxi, which is equivalent to the taxi plates over here in Australia. Over here, I think they go for like, $400,000 or $500,000 sometimes. I think in New York, it's a few million dollars just to get a permit to operate a taxi in New York. There's two sets of files. There was a trip data, .csv, and there's a trip fare, .csv, which had the details of the trip and details of the fare, and a unique key. The unique key was it was obviously just a composite key with the medallion number, the hack license, and the pickup date and time altogether, which would give you exactly which trip you're looking at. He actually published this visualization. This was built using D3. So have a look at that. Don't get hypnotized, but just... I'm just going to let it sink in. So don't look at it too much. That is effectively, it's just a, it was a visualization built using D3. Anybody use D3? Ah, one person. Great. So D3 is a open source kind of framework to design cool visualizations. It's ask that guy, basically, over there. So, and Travis, who's really good at it. So people got this and as I said, they went to town on the data. So people, you know, the paparazzi picture, you know, US is, you know, known for its paparazzi crazy culture. So you would see, apparently New York is a city where paparazzi is happy to, anybody feeling dizzy, by the way? Sorry. No. So apparently New York is a city where the paparazzi is okay with taking taxis. So they get snapped quite a lot getting on a taxi or off a taxi or in a taxi and stuff like that. People looked at it and then, you know, hey, you know, the photos, you know, if when they're on an online site, they have time and date, so you can match it to whatever, you know. And then these kind of things actually started popping up. So, you know, that's Catherine Heigl or Hegel, I'm not sure. Anyway, so she was apparently taking a taxi. That's the route she took because people knew, okay, that's the photo that was taken over here. Right, so that's the trip that she took. And then, you know, you can see Judd Apatow and Leslie Mann taking a particular trip. They're pretty happy about it. I'm almost never happy in a taxi, so. I like Uber, though. Don't say that to the taxi driver outside. But the cool part was, what is also visible, if you look at it closely, is the tip amount. So now articles started popping up in the news like, Catherine Heigl only tipped like $3.62. It's like, oh, cheap celebrities, you know? So that's like, that's data science at work, like, you know, totally. You know, these guys are even cheaper. That's like $2.10. Like, that's really bad. Like, I tip more than that when I'm in the U.S. Come on, guys. So those kind of things came to town. So, all right, so let me move on to the next slide. So question is, what do you guys think? So I showed you one prediction, but what do you guys think we can predict? So I'm open to answers. What do you think we can predict from this particular data set?
From the tip amounts, you can work out whether it's celebrity or not.
I showed you that one. All right.
Taxi vacancy rate.
Vacancy rate, that's a good one. Right? Okay. Predictive tip durations. Because the data set already has durations, but yeah, that's a good one. Hadn't thought of that. Absolutely. That's a good one. So things like, you know, was a tip fade? You know, that's, you know, you already said it. Not just specifically for celebrities, but for anyone. That's a binary classification problem. Anybody used Azure ML yet or before? Okay, some people. So binary classification, basically what we're trying to do is there's only two possible outcomes, tip was paid or not, and you're just trying to predict which outcome. It's probably one of the simplest data science problems you can solve. Things like, yeah, exactly what you said, you know, what was the range? You know, was it a $0 to $2 tip or a $2 to $4 tip or a $4 to $8 tip? So different classes, let's say. So that's a multi-class classification problem that you can potentially look at predicting. Then the next one, what would be the exact predicted tip amount? So let's say you and I, we decided to take a cab to the airport on Friday afternoon when the conference is over. What would be the most likely tip? All right, and that's a regression problem because you're trying to predict the exact numerical value of a particular outcome. All right. So I'm going to be one of the first people to actually ask you to take your mobile phones out now, because I'm going to ask you to go to this particular site. So I deployed the site last night, so hopefully it's all good. And So I'm going to leave the screen up for a little bit. So what you'll see when you go on the site is an app called NY Rides. It's a company which is not yet incorporated, so don't steal the name. Anyway, so if you go to that particular website on a browser, you should be directed to a site. Don't do anything yet. Are you, everybody reached that site? Loading well? Azure working well? Cool. By the way, that's a demo of Azure websites. That's it. Done. All right. So you go to that site now. I should probably change my machine. Hang on. All right. So I'm going to ask you now to, so you should see two options on the site. There's a driver one, be a driver, and there's a be a passenger one, like I need a ride. So if you, so everybody from here on right, can you please be taxi drivers? And everybody from here on left, can you please, for the duration of our session today, be a passenger seeking a fare. And it's quite intuitive. Type in a particular nickname which you think would be crazy enough and not inappropriate and unique enough. And then start requesting fares. So for the passengers, start requesting fares. And the drivers start bidding on the fares that you'll see. You might need to refresh the site a little bit. All right. All right, I'm already seeing some activity. By the way, that's the real live dashboard of people. So this is Stream Analytics, Power BI, Event Hubs, everything at work. So we're creating data right now. All right. And by the way, there is a prize for the top passenger and the top driver at the end of the session. All right. So we will go to this particular dashboard, and I will sort it by the number of, you know. So keep on creating the data. That's all I can say. Also, listen to me during the whole. Don't just, because I remember someone did this similar demo in a previous conference in Redmond, and somebody actually went up to 3,000 trips during the session. So that person clearly did not come here with the right intentions. All right, so average tip amount, okay. Cool. While you're doing that, I'm going to quickly show you the pieces that are being used. So when you are creating the data, so and everybody's familiar with the app now, right? So I'm just going to assume because you guys are using the app, you're familiar with the interface, what it's sending. So the first thing that the data is being sent to is what we call event hubs. So that's the piece in the Cortana Analytics suite that I referred to before. So event hubs is effectively a very, very large scale event ingestion engine. All of Azure telemetry runs on it. All of Xbox telemetry runs on it. All of Office 365 telemetry runs on it. It's extremely, extremely well-managed large-scale event ingestion engine. It's effectively just an endpoint in the cloud that you can write events to at a very large scale. Some event hubs can scale up to, you know, 20 million events a second, so like depending on how wide the event data is and stuff like that. So it is quite powerful. I'm going to leave that dashboard be for a while. Yeah. All right, so we're, how come we only have 38 passengers? Sorry? Oh, right, okay. You want the URL again. So I'm gonna show it. I think I have it here. So so that's the one. So aka.ms/ignite/ NY Rides. That good? I'm guessing everybody else has a URL. You just reminded me of my my struggles to university. I could never see what was going on. I was like, can you go back a slide? It's not a smart, can you go back a slide? It's more like, I just didn't follow. Anyway, all right, so let me go back to give me 2 seconds. Sorry, guys. I'm just going to open up Azure Machine Learning Studio, and I'm going to walk you through the experiment itself and how you might, you know, picture what's actually happening. So, bless you. So this is just a very simple I'm just going to walk you through the experiment itself. All right. So this is Azure Machine Learning Studio, what you're seeing on screen right now. Azure Machine Learning Studio is it's the IDE, which is a browser-based IDE to develop data science algorithms, operationalize them, manage them. It's very powerful in the sense that you can actually, search for different algorithms over here and pull them in as well. And I'll be more than happy to do a very in-depth discussion with you around Azure Machine Learning, if you're interested in it, at the showcase as well, where we have the expo. Feel free to come up to the data platform area in Microsoft, and I'll be there. I can walk you through it. This is personally my most favorite product in Microsoft. And in this example, so basically this is the designing pane where you actually connect different code blocks. So data science used to be, and it still is to a degree, an ad hoc science and not an engineered science. So a lot of the intel and a lot of the IP that people create tends to not proliferate outside the actual community, which is, you know, less than 1 million people strong. So So what we've done, our push is to make that transition from an analyst who's working in things like Excel and other BI tools to who's actually got a very good handle on the pulse of the business and what the problems are in the business that you can solve with potentially the data you already might have, to an advanced analytics scenario. So where you don't necessarily need to know the nooks and crannies and the bolts and the dials within an algorithm, but if somebody gave you a recipe to become a master chef at solving data science problems, you can apply that recipe to your problem. All right, that's kind of the idea. So what we've got in this one, in this particular problem, is that's a reader class. You can just search for here, like, and it will show up like that. Do a drag and drop. I'm not going to do that. I've already got it here. So in the reader class, all I've done is you can connect to multiple different sources, but in this case, I've got an Azure SQL database where I'm reading the data into. That's a normal SQL query it's just a T-SQL query that I'm running on a particular Azure SQL database. That's the SQL database. Oh, actually, I should not show that because somebody on the stream will probably use it anyway. That's the T-SQL query. I'm taking all of the required events data from the, and I'm creating a sample to train my model on. So I said to you before, there's 173 million records on that particular data set. When you're doing experimentation in data science, you probably wouldn't be training every single time on 173 million records of data. So you're probably best advised to stratify and split the data into a good sample. Like in my case, I'm just using a 1% sample for the data, so which is a pretty good, pretty chunky size of data, and I'm training on that. So I've used a reader class to read the data straight out of a SQL database. And this could be an on-premise SQL server. It doesn't have to be a SQL Azure database. I'm using metadata editors to basically do some transforms and say, hey, this particular data type is, or something like that has changed. This is a feature versus a parameter. Using a missing value scrubber to say, hey, wherever there's a missing value, replace it with a zero, and I'm going to see if that gives me a good outcome. If there isn't, if it's you can actually replace it with, let's say, an average or something like that, up to you. Let us look at how the data actually looks like. I'm going to click on that, visualize the data over here, and it should kind of show you what the data looks like. We have our first walk away. That's it. Shame. No prizes for you. All right, so that's how the data kind of looks like. So we have the medallion, the hack license, vendor ID, whatever, whatever. The payment type. You can see it gives you some descriptive statistics about the data itself. And tip class, so and stuff like that, effectively. Vendor ID, as you can see, there's two cartels for taxis in New York. It's pretty much like how many taxis are owned by just two companies? Come on. Anyway, so take that data, use some metadata editor, get rid of the missing values, whatever, or average them or whatever, and then here's where the actual sciencey bit starts. It's fairly simple. I'm just using a split data module. All I'm doing is, in terms of training a model or training an algorithm to start making predictions or intelligent predictions on my data, I need to make sure that I train it on a subsample of that data, and then I test it against a sample of data which it has never seen. So I took this 1%, 1.73 million rows are a good sample. Now I'm going to take 70% of that and train my model on that 70% and then test it against the 30% of the data that my model has never seen. So effectively, I used a multi-class logistic regression. You can use your own algorithm. So if I just typed in regression over here, there's many different types of regression. I use that one. You can use whatever you want. It's basically dependent on how much more accurate can you get it at, right? So that's actually one of the big, I would say, advantages of using Azure Machine Learning. Because if I was to go to my old days when I used to do a lot of this stuff using MATLAB, for example, you can still do it with R and Python. You're doing a lot of this heavy lifting around plugging and playing with different models and algorithms and stuff like that. Because you got to, take the code out, rewrite the code, start calling, new libraries and stuff like that. So there's a fair amount of, I would say sorting the weeds and actually going through re-engineering your stuff and wrangling it, which there is a very, very important place for it. That's called advanced data science. That's where you will end up with when you're doing a lot of research work and where you start building new models. But for most scenarios, to solve real business problems right now and have do it quickly, you don't need to worry about that. So this is where you can plug and play different models. I'm using a train model module to train it, and then very simple score model module to score it against my data set that I had already got. So I'm going to discard the changes and actually show you, because I had already scored this model. So all right. And so I'm going to evaluate the model, show you how it looks like. Kind of. So if these were the actual tip classes, so $0 to $5, $5 to $10, or $0 to $2, $2 to $4, whatever, and these were the predicted classes, this is what we call in the data science term. It's called a confusion matrix. So it's kind of a good way to visualize which predictions are most accurate and what band. As you can see, like no tip is very accurate. The model can really tell you if somebody's actually ever going to pay a tip or not, or not at all. So first class, like small tip, I think less than 10% tip is really accurate. Gets a bit fudgy when it's trying to, as you can see, like when it's trying to, get between classes 1 and 2. It's like, it might be that, 4.99 is a very, that's where you start to wrangle with the data a little bit, but and that's your kind of confidence levels with different predictions, all right? We go to that. But so everybody following up to now? Show of hands if you're not following and if you want me to cover something else. I've got, I said, keep it very interactive. Questions so far? Good? Workflow is good? Oh, okay. So that's a bigger question than just Azure. It's more of a, it's your decision, effectively. So, right, if you... Yes. So some level of cleansing obviously has to be there. You're not going to... Like, there's certain types...
What he's asking is, can you basically load your full data set?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that's, you would get to a confidence level of prediction using small data sets. You'll kind of weed out, say, hey, okay, that particular algorithm is probably giving me the best outcome against 1,000 rows, so I'm just going to train the rest of it on that. We do have another feature within Azure ML, which is called sweep parameters. So sweep parameters, what it does is when you have those training algorithms, every algorithm has its own levers to pull. Sweep parameters will, you can say, I don't know what the settings are for this, I'm not a data scientist, I don't know what the perfect settings are for this particular model or this particular algorithm. So sweep it from 1 to 100 and run it on small chunks of data and see what gives me the best possible accuracy. Or you can define, I don't want accuracy, I want recall. And then it will stratify the data set and it will go and say, okay, I'm just going to run multiple different sections. I'm going to run 10 different models with different settings and give you the best possible outcome. That's what you can do as well. You can also use a stratified split when you're doing the split, that 70-30 that I showed you, where you say, I absolutely do not want this model to see this particular data set. I just wanted to train on this particular data set, stuff like that. So there's multiple ways. Yeah. Yeah. So the golden rule is more data equals better accuracy. There is a point of diminishing return, but generally speaking, yes. In my case, it's probably I'll need to spend more time on actually, making it cleaner and actually making the prediction levels. Maybe I need to tweak the class itself to get a better rate. I haven't spent that amount of time because on that particular model. But there is a very detailed walkthrough online as well, and I'll walk you through that. So let me quickly give you a bit of a feel of that detailed walkthrough. Is that okay? Is that a good level? Cool. All right, I'm getting a few nods, apart from the person who just walked off. All right. So if you go to, see what's going on. 244. Person's totally not listening to me. All right. Whoever you are, I'll find you. All right. So this is one of the actual walkthroughs. So anybody use IPython notebooks or Jupyter notebooks, Pandas data frames? No. Okay. So IPython notebooks. So Python, everybody knows what Python is. It's a very popular language, both for computer scientists and also for data scientists and, you know, data folks in general. But IPython notebooks is effectively, it's a notebook format where you have both code embedded and very, very, you know, extensive documentation. You could write a book as an IPython notebook and have the code embedded, and you can run the book itself, right? Instead of, you know, running a specific set of code somewhere else. So this is an IPython notebook that we've created. So you can, it'll give you an idea of what the data is and where the, you know, so back to your question around, you know, me actually spending more time with the data and getting the confidence levels up, absolutely. Yeah, if you spend more time with it and you know, acclimatize yourself to the data, you can get it up, fairly up. Is Hong in the room? Hey, we have our senior data scientist over there, so if you have even bigger data science-y questions, Hong is here to help me. Cool. So this is kind of the notebook. As you can see, those are the class. I think that's the trib distribution. That's the two kind of two vendors. It's looking at trip time predictions, subsampling the data in SQL. That's your, back to your question. You can look at how, what are the kind of better ways of looking at the data itself. Then we also have a full walkthrough in Azure around just SQL itself, in that 80% work where you have to do with the data preparation. We have a full walkthrough of that as well. I'll share the details of that towards the end of the session. All right. Okay. So I'm going to move into back to my slide deck, I think, at this point. Not back to my slide deck. Before that. So once we've created, you saw the model, right? That's the model. I'm happy with the prediction. Great. No problem. That's the experiment. What I can do now is, if I say, so in that case, when I have the app that I've given you, I want to give the app to the drivers where, I think drivers are on this side. So when you're seeing the predicted tip, the tip number that you're seeing in the app itself, that's the predicted tip that's coming from Azure ML. So that model is predicting what this particular trip that those guys are requesting, the tip would be for you guys. So how would you an app actually consume that particular prediction? So what you can do is you can just click on this button over here, if you can see it, and say set up a web service. I've already set up the web service. That's what my prediction experiment looks like. So that's my web service. So it's very simple. All of that model that I already had gets put into, all of the trained model gets put into that particular module over there. Everybody can see it. And what I've done is the reader is already there, but I had a few transformation modules over there. What I've done is all the web service input will go through the same transformation steps, so I don't have to redo them in a particular C# environment or anything like that. And I've got the web service output. So I've published that web service. And that output can be consumed by anybody who's sending data and receiving a prediction can be consumed. So you guys are consuming that already on this side, and you guys are requesting that, all right? So now we have the web service itself looks like this. If I go to the taxis web service, so once you publish the web service, you can publish it as just as a web service, or you can publish it as an API straight into the Azure Cortana Analytics Gallery and say, I want to charge people for using this web service. Like every 1,000 predictions, I want to make $3 or something like that. Like put your own whatever rate on it, and that becomes really, there's already multiple hundreds of experiments on there that people are using. So when I publish that web service API, I get an API key, as you can see. I can test that right now. So if I put in those data like that, it's not a good way to test it, but if you want to just do a sanity check, you can do it over there. I can download an Excel workbook. I won't do it now, but effectively the Excel workbook has all of the API and macros built in, and you can just dump like, you know, hundreds or thousands if not millions of lines of data into that and do a batch prediction straight from Excel itself, just for your reporting purposes if you want. Or here, you can have a batch execution API from there. Or here's the cool bit. So if I go into request response, what it does is it didn't just create an API. It created a full API help page for me. Right? This is where things get really, really cool. So I've got the API help page. You know, that's how you post to the API. That's the headers. This is a sample request. So you guys on my left, when you're sending in requests for trips, you're basically creating this data over here. All right? That data gets sent not just to the booking server, but that data gets also sent through Stream Analytics. It gets predicted using Azure ML. All right? And the sample response to that is in that format. That sample response format is going to you guys as these are the trips that are coming up that you're going to bid on. That's where you know you're getting that predicted your tip amount, and you can choose to take it, choose to bid on it or not. All right? That is extremely cool because it's pure industry standard JSON. So what you can do as an app developer is do a control C, copy the sample response, paste special into Visual Studio, say paste as JSON, paste that as class, and it will take the JSON, convert it into the requisite C# class structure, and paste it into Visual Studio. That's one of the coolest features of Visual Studio that I found personally. So apart from IntelliSense saves lives, all right? So, all right, it does, my life. All right. And you can do it for both. You know, when you're building a requesting app as well, do the same thing. All right. So now we scroll down to the inputs that you're getting. So this is just a bit of documentation on what the types of inputs are. They can be different, and we can do if you have the right transformation built into the model itself, then these don't need to be super accurate over here. But doesn't hurt. We have the output parameters, obviously. And here's the awesome bit, because now so Azure ML actually created your own the sample code that you can just copy and paste into your application in C#, Python, and R, and get running straight away. All you need to do to this sample code for it to run at this point is scroll down here. Go to the API key. You see that ABC123 over there? And replace it with the API key that you received in the previous page that I showed you. Did anybody miss the API key? No. All right. You missed it? Oh, okay. Yeah, so just copy-paste it into that ABC123, and your app should be up and running straight away. All right? So that's the power of doing everything in the cloud. I've not set up a VM. I've not set up a DNS server. I've not, gone and got a, MongoDB server to host some particular models or anything like that. I've just clearly all I care about is the IP that I'm building into my model that makes sense to my business and the application interface that I'm giving to my users and my customers. All right? So that's the power. Okay. Next bit, I am going to shift to the, all right, cool. By the way, in the Stream Analytics area, I'm going to quickly show you. Let me go to a different subscription. I'll show you the Stream Analytics query that I'm using on your event stream to publish to my Power BI dashboard. You guys might laugh. Right, while that is loading. By the way, I said you guys might laugh because I haven't done anything on it. All I've done is select star, put into Power BI. So if I go into the Power BI dashboard, I think it's this one's. Yep, it's just loading. Sorry. Oh, let's look at what people are doing. All right, 1,000. Oh, wow. Okay, we might actually beat 3,000 today. That's good. Right. Okay, I don't have much longer anyway. All right, so I'm going to move on now. All right. So let's look at the... All right, that's the stream analytics. So that's the NYRide stream analytics job that I'm actually using. So if I go into that, look at the inputs are just two event hubs. These are both data streams on the service bus that I created. The query itself, I know you guys would laugh. That's what it is. Don't hate me, but that's what it is. All right, and I'm doing, so you can do either way. You can either put, you know, just stream analytics supports temporal hopping windows and stuff like that. So you can, you know, have very, very complex queries in there. But for the case of the demo, I actually didn't really spend the time to actually understand what temporal window I would want. But you can do that. And the output in this case is just, I've just two Power BI instances. And over here, if I go back to my Power BI, if I clicked on any one of those, it'll actually take me to the report that I'd already created. This is, don't judge me for the quality of the report, but all I'm doing is, if I was to go to edit report, those are just all the data that's getting collected, coming straight into Power BI. By the way, Power BI, the only BI tool that does fully real-time data. All right, applause, anybody? Oh, come on, guys. Yay, yay. Awesome, all right. Okay, next one. Let me go and talk to you about, let me go back. Sorry? On the desktop, you can connect to the source and then publish it into the service. That's where in the dashboard itself it'll start. In the desktop, you're building a report, so it's not doing it real time. It will. So the way it works is it will establish the connection, but then once you publish it, it will transfer the connection over. And if you have the right credentials to the credential server, will actually just it will work effectively. There's other things we're introducing, things like which are in preview at the moment, like the enterprise gateway and stuff like that. And there's a personal gateway as well, where you can configure all of your connections, and then when you publish it. Yeah. By the way, how many of you know that you can actually publish straight into Power BI now from Excel 2016? Aha, fun fact. All right, so you don't necessarily have to get rid of Excel. You can start publishing pivot models from Excel. All right, okay. So we're good with that. I'm going to shift to the other one. All right. Cool. All right. So what we saw was effectively those particular components. Like I said, the Cortana Analytics Suite, it's, you know, the fastest evolving product, suite of products in the Microsoft Azure landscape. So it's getting more and more things into it. So this is where, you know, you saw the real-time stuff. You saw, you know, how you know, you can connect it, and we're creating data. We're streaming real-time data, and then doing analytics on top of it. And it's, you know, it's all, because it's designed to work together and configured together, it's pretty straightforward. This is a, you can take photos of it if you want. This is kind of a high-level as to what's actually happening with a little bit more detail around it. We have the second walk-off. All right, cool. Oh, yeah, the third walk-off. All right, okay. That's it. Oh, wow. All right, okay. That's it. Don't let the door hit you, man. All right, okay. So that's the sort of the high-level architecture. In the session earlier, we showed howl.net, built on the exact same mindset. But that's well and good. But a lot of the times when you're doing it, when you're doing it in an enterprise context, one of the questions is, okay, that's great for one scenario. Now I need resilience. Now I need repeatability. Now I need to do it every day. Now I need to aggregate results. Now I need proper reporting. Now I need to manage my resources, you know, and I need to make it available to people in a sort of a factory mindset. So in that case, you know, how do I actually go about, you know, making it an enterprise solution? So that's where why we kind of built that Cortana analytics process. So if you take that URL, aka.ms/Cortana analytics process, we have a decision kind of support flowchart, which will help you. So you go through the different kinds of problems, the different kinds of data you might have, the different scenarios you want to solve, and the process will actually walk you through what you might be able to achieve in that particular context of your decision making. All right, taking photos of it. Cool. So what we covered so far, but the process basically effectively is like it'll teach you what VMs to get if you want to do data science. So we have VM templates already in the Azure catalog, which one to get, how to configure it, which ports to open up, and stuff like that. So that's where setting up the environment. It will tell you how to load the data. This is a pretty, you know, as all data loading goes, it's a pretty tedious process. So it'll tell you how to load the data from SQL, how to load the data from Hadoop or into Hadoop or vice versa, pushing data up from on-premise and stuff like that. And then explore the, how to do the data science bit and explore the data, see which of the features would be useful for making predictions. So which what we call, you know, feature engineering on the sample data. Build the models in Azure Machine Learning. It will actually walk you through all of that. And then we go into deploying the model, what I just showed you. You create the web service and deploy it, manage it. And if you use Azure API Management, you can put very rich telemetry on the deployment as well. Who's using it? How much are they using it? And stuff like that. And then finally, consume the model. So those are kind of like the five stages that you'll be seeing in that particular example. The next bit, I've already walked through this. This was basically me walking through the IPython notebooks. I'm not going to deliberate much into it, but that's another URL. So aka.ms/CAP, which is Cortana Analytics Process, /SQL walkthrough. So if you're interested in going into detail on how, and those data science VMs that I spoke to you about, if you deploy any one of those VMs, they will check out that, because this is on GitHub. So they will check out these for you, and you can start working on them straight away. Now, very quickly, I don't have a lot of time, and I want to leave some time for questions as well. How are we going for time, mate? 10 minutes? Cool. All right. I want to walk through the operationalizing it. So when I said, how do we, you know, make it, you know, enterprise grade? How do we make it, you know, real in terms of aggregating the data, because I want to cache some data already because my app needs to run fast. I need to have operational reporting every day when my execs come in and stuff like that. So for that particular scenario, let me change to the other machine. All right, and we'll go to the Azure portal. So in this case, the way we would do it is Azure Data Factory. So Azure Data Factory is kind of your ETL/data movement factory tool in the cloud, which can also talk and interact with on-premise data sources and also compute units and stuff like that. Uses HD Insight as a compute unit right now, but there are plans of expanding that. Not at the moment though. So this is the NYRide factory. This is what is actually pushing. Can potentially give me the caching, cache data or score data for operational reporting. I'll show you the Power BI dashboard, not for this one, but I had one before. I'll show you kind of the things that it might actually. All right, so for that kind of, you know, temporal reporting, what happened every month, because one of the very common methods of when you have, you know, millions or billions of lines of data is to partition it and then and then score and work on those partitions simultaneously, like in Hadoop or something like that. So this is very good for, like, you know, when you're trying to do large scale batch compute, this Azure Data Factory kind of comes into its own. So let me quickly walk you through the factory pipeline. I'm going to show you the diagram. It's a fairly cool diagram. So this is the raw data that's coming in. By the way, Azure Data Factory at the moment, the way you create the factory is by writing pure industry standard JSON. All right, there's no cool language extra or anything like that. Well, maybe beyond my pay grade, but anyway. This is just a pipeline, which is taking the raw data out of blob storage, which where we uploaded the data. Blob storage is the baseline storage level in Azure. And then we partition the data into month and year using a particular Hive script. So anybody use Hive? Hadoop? A little bit? One person? Cool. So if I was to double click on that, I'll show you quickly. Hive is very similar to TSQL. So if I look at the pipeline source, this is effectively what it's doing when it decides to not be moody. Hang on. Might have to refresh that. All right, so let me talk through it anyway while it's refreshing. All it's doing is basically I know the table that I'm getting the data into first up. Then I know the way I want to partition it. I've parameterized the source and the destination so that I can, you know, keep on adding new partitions or you know, change the compute endpoints and stuff like that, and basically plug it in to a pipeline model, which should load very soon. All right. I'm going to blame the connectivity. Apologies. Yay, we have the friendly Azure loading symbol. All right, so I'm going to walk you through the pipeline very quickly. I have about 7 minutes, and then we'll open it up very quickly for questions. All right, not behaving. All right, yes. So what I've done is I've partitioned the data, the initial raw data, then added the customer data set that was being pulled in from another data source. The partition data is getting aggregated into like monthly reporting and temporal reporting and stuff like that. Then it's being I'm doing a bunch of predictions on that with ML in the background. I'm not going to open the Hive script now. In the background, it's basically just hitting an ML endpoint, which is making like millions of predictions, pre-predicting a lot of those, and then doing the testing, doing the training, and then the predicted tips are again put into a blob storage, and then from the blob storage and copying it into Azure SQL, so that if there is a scenario where the connectivity between ML or Azure and my own data center kind of falters, I still have a fallback plan where on my server I have a bunch of predicted outcomes which I can refer to and then still have the app running in the background. So you make it resilient for an enterprise scenario. All right, I'm not going to labor too much more on that. Cool. All right, so we've answered that. So just very quickly, that was the process we just spoke of. And now I want to quickly show you a very short video of this in action with a customer already, all right? So let me go through that. This customer is a private healthcare provider out of the US, one of the larger healthcare providing hospitals, and they're moving into predictive healthcare, all right? So I'm just going to roll that.
The U.S. healthcare system is challenged by the task to deliver exceptional, personalized care at a lower cost. Despite spending nearly one-fifth of our gross domestic product on healthcare, we struggle to meet this goal. Financial pressures on care providers are increasing. This isn't sustainable. So how can we deliver high-quality, personalized care that patients deserve, given the cost pressures we face? At Dartmouth-Hitchcock, we've created ImagineCare, a new cloud-based solution built on Cortana Analytics Suite and Microsoft Dynamics that enables providers to help patients achieve better health. With the help of Microsoft, Dartmouth-Hitchcock is building a technology platform to serve healthcare organizations and patients across the country, setting a new standard for personalized care. Now, using machine intelligence, providers can develop a care plan that's unique to each patient. We can monitor patients from their homes, where data is collected from devices and sent to the cloud, to ImagineCare's 24/7 contact center, where registered nurses continually monitor a patient's health status and potentially serious trends.
Cortana, summarize health status for Ben Andrews.
Ben Andrews' weight has increased more than 2 pounds in the last 24 hours. Please review the home diuresis protocol prescribed by Dr. Phillips.
Patients get reminders and encouragement and dynamic updates to their care plans, improving their health, helping them avoid unnecessary trips to the emergency room, and reducing the cost of care. With support from loved ones and real-time interventions, there is less likelihood of readmission. With Cortana Analytics Suite and Microsoft Dynamics, we're transforming the way healthcare is delivered today, improving patient outcomes, reducing costs, and offering an unprecedented level of personalized care.
Cool. All right. Just a recap on the useful links before I look at the users who have potentially won a prize. Take a photo of that. Chris Wong, by the way, is the guy who has been working internally on our work with that NYC data set, so feel free to write to him. My own contact is just barnum.bora@microsoft.com if you want to come to me. I'll be available at the expo area. Now, let me actually look at what's happening with the competition. Did you take the photos of that, by the way? All right. Okay. Top drivers. Oh, not that one. Sorry. Who's that? KHAM. Who was that? You. All right. So we have a top driver. You are, sir. Sorry. Oh, that's okay. Let's look at the other one. Who's Darpy driver? Great. All right, and the passenger was? You were? Okay, two gentlemen. In respect to recent events in France, I thought it'll be apt to get two French football team logo hats for you guys. So I feel very deeply about the incidents and keeping the people who died and who were injured in our prayers. I thought I'll give these to you guys. There you go. Pretty much a wrap. Hope you guys enjoyed the session. Please feel free to give me feedback however you want. Also, feel free to ask me questions now. I'll hang out here for a little while and go from there. We have a level 300 session on Cortana Analytics, connected cars, IoT devices on Thursday. Hong is doing a session on Revolution Analytics, which is a recent acquisition, by the way, which is parallelized R processing as well. That'll be a very hardcore session. Please go to that.